The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live right now, email her, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome to Down the Garden Path. This is where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, garden, and landscapes. And as a landscape designer, I think it's really important and possible to have a great garden that is low maintenance. And I really love researching topics and guests that can help us with that. And I hope you do too. I hope you're enjoying all the different topics and guests we've been covering in the last few months, actually. And quite a few months in, Gary. My goodness.
Look at you.
Yeah, you know, and time flies.
When you started this show, it was like Snow City.
Yes, it was.
I mean, we're
yeah.
talking about garden and garden design,
in
decks,
November, yeah.
all kinds of things. Yep. And people are looking out their driveway, and it looks like Alaska.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm hoping I've covered, I continue to cover great ideas. So, but I do want my listeners to know if there's anything they are interested in hearing about, if there's something else you want me to cover or questions you want me to answer, then please email me at joanne@downtoearth.ca. Or during the show here at Reality Radio 101 at yahoo.com. So please, I want to make sure I'm finding the question, the answers to your questions is my goal. So talking about gardens, and especially this time of year, I think one of the most important things to think about is the soil. So when you are growing flowers, plants, vegetables or both, what is happening in our soil is very important, especially in the spring. I think that's a time of year where people are paying much more attention. They're out buying the bags of all the different things to add to their soil. So I'm really excited about my guest today is going to discuss soil. He is a soil scientist with over 30 years experience advising growers on soil management issues. That's what we're doing when we're buying all those bags. We're trying to manage our soil. And he has written a book to help us. It is called Improving Your Soil, A Practical Guide to Soil Management for the Serious Home Gardener. And it's definitely for the serious home gardener. So I'd like to welcome to the show Keith Reed.
Thanks very much, Joanne. Pleasure to be here this evening.
Thank you for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like me to add to your bio?
I guess a bit of background.
Sure.
Started out on a farm. Grew up on a farm in Bruce County. We had some of those tough clay soils that you had to learn patience. We looked with envy at some of the people not too far south of us that had some nice sandy soils.
Okay.
They could go be out two or three weeks earlier than we could. But we got some early practical experience, or I did, and that led to a fascination with what is going on under our feet and why it's different from one place to the other. And that's translated into a career dealing mostly with farmers, but always gardening on the side. And when the opportunity came up to write a book taking what I knew and framing it really for the gardener, it was a natural fit.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say the pictures and your diagrams are very helpful. Because you can describe, you know, even us, it's going to be a little challenging to describe, you know, how you treat and squeeze soil over the radio. But, you know, the images that you created in the line drawings were very helpful.
I certainly hope they will be. we're talking, I'll probably be moving my arms and describing things in the air in front of me. But
yes, I do that as well.
getting that across. Yeah, without people being able to see it.
That's right. That's right. I do that as well, too. I have to clear off. Gary always wants me to have water or tea or something, but then I know I'm going to knock it off. So it's better not to. So I'm sure you agree with me when, like I said, spring tends to be the time where people, even though it's kind of pre-spring right now, right? I know the first day of spring is Friday, but whether we still have snow cover where we are here just outside of Toronto. How about you, where you are?
Well, I'm in Guelph, and yes, we still have snow cover. The brown grass is starting to poke through.
Okay.
In places, and there's a few bulbs starting to stick up where there's bare ground, but we're a long way from actually being out in the garden yet.
So yes.
Pre-spring is a good way to describe it, which means we're itchy.
That's right. We're definitely itchy, and Canada Blooms is here in Toronto, and that's got everybody kind of thinking spring as well. But as the snow, when the snow has all melted, let's say, and it's still early spring and the soil hasn't for sure dried out because now all that water that was good for the soil and the grass has now seeped into the soil.
And this is where, we really have to resist the urge to get out too soon and be doing stuff before the ground is really dried out. This is the time of year you can actually do a lot of damage just walking on your lawn or walking on the flower bed. Now, if you've got dedicated paths,
stepping stones or something.
Yes. Yes, if you've got dedicated paths in the dirt, you probably find you go out and go up to your ankles because it's still slop. But even after it's started to dry out, it looks okay. You can actually pack that soil pretty easily, and if you compact that soil, you're squeezing all the pores shut, and that's what lets the water drain through. So if you think about it, if you know there's been a path you have been following, it when it never dries as quickly as the rest of the garden, and you can create those conditions everywhere you walk if you're out there too early.
Right.
And it's also those pores that let the soil breathe, because the organisms in the soil, if it's a healthy soil, they need oxygen the same way plants do.
Yeah, and that was was something I didn't realize. That was very informative. It, like, as soon as I read it, it was like, oh yes, of course they do.
there's a lot more organisms in the soil, and they're very adaptable to different conditions. But the ones that are adapted to saturated conditions and low oxygen environments aren't necessarily the ones that are going to be the most helpful in what we want to have happen in our gardens.
Okay.
So we want to create that environment where, we do have well-aerated soils and then where the water can drain through easily. It's a bit of a myth to think, I'll go back and I'll fix the damage I do now later with rototiller.
Okay. Or shoveling, are people thinking they're going to turn it? I'm doing good because I'm now turning the soil and I'm and putting the moist soil. I'm working it in.
Yes.
That's still not a good thing.
Well, you're number one. You're trying to fix something that you created yourself. I guess I've described my way of my approach as proactive laziness. I'll work hard to avoid having to do work later.
That's a good one.
3 days too soon in the spring before the ground is really fit is creating more work for later.
Okay.
So it's best just to, if it's a sandy soil and it looks dry on top, you're probably okay. If it's a loam soil, or particularly if it's clay soil, a loam soil, when it looks dry on top, you wait two more days. If it's a clay soil, you wait another week. Because it'll look dry on top and still be gummy underneath.
Okay.
When you think about just walking over, you think, well, person isn't that heavy.
Yeah.
But we're also, you know, we're not that heavy if we laid in the ground and rolled over it.
Yes. But standing.
Standing on it, we've concentrated all that weight on our feet. So our feet aren't that big.
Yeah.
And so you've actually got a lot of pounds per square inch.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, the turning of the soil, that still also contributes, right? You're not adding any benefit there.
Well, especially in, especially when the soil is wet.
Yeah.
You know, really what you do is you squeeze together the soil particles. You know, you're creating zones in the soil that are, or you're creating bricks.
Okay.
Yeah, and the more clay there is in the soil, the more tendency there is for it to squeeze together into bricks when you work it when it's too wet.
Right. And you mentioned 3 days, you're not talking weeks and weeks, but
you're
talking, you know, get some good warm days.
Yeah.
Not the first warm day.
But that's waiting after it's it looks dry on top.
Okay.
You know, so that's the hard part.
Yes.
You think, it's ready to go on. No, it's ready to go on 5 days from now or a week from now.
Okay. Now, I have, and I'm sure many of our listeners do, and I definitely want to talk about this more in depth later, but I have, you know, a good, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 inches of compost on, or not, sorry, of mulch on top of my soil.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean I have to wait even longer?
That's a bit of a two-edged sword, or I won't say two-edged sword. It works both ways.
Yes.
The mulch, the structure of the mulch itself will help to distribute your weight.
Okay.
You know, so
it'll help a bit with compression.
It'll help a bit. And if you've got mulch in the soil, that would imply to me it's a perennial bed, or
yes,
you know, it's not something you're disturbing. So those soils tend to be, if you like, firmer or carry more weight.
Okay.
Than a soil that's been disturbed.
Okay.
So you've got an advantage there. But you're right. It probably means you can walk on it sooner. And the guideline is going to be, okay, what's the soil next to it that doesn't have mulch? What's it like? Yeah, you know, once it's dry, okay, you can probably go over the mulch.
Okay. Or the lawn. Could we use our lawn as a gauge as well?
Your lawn as an indicator, yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll want to wait longer before you actually get digging in under the mulch.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, and I really don't have any reason to dig. I mean,
well, you'd be unlike most gardeners because there's always a spot.
I guess. That's true. For a new plant. Well, hellebores. I still don't own any, and I've really got to get some. So that might be my exception, right? Because I need mm-hmm. to get those in the garden. So I will try to resist. So when it's a good time to start working in the garden, and you know, this is definitely, it must be the top selling month for, you know, people to get out and buy their bags of manure and their bags of compost and start, you know, adding things to their soil.
Right.
Is that the first thing we should be doing? Is that the best thing we should be doing in spring?
I think a lot of people should be stepping back because it's easy to go, you know, there's lots of marketing going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Spend a little time thinking about, okay, what have I got and what do I need?
Okay.
You know, rather than just, you know, buying whatever and throwing it on and hoping for the best.
Right, right.
And what I find, well, if I look at, if you like, soil test reports from gardens, it's two extremes.
Okay.
There's somebody who's got a, you know, they've just bought a house in a new subdivision. They're trying to plant something in subsoil, and their soil doesn't have anything in it.
Okay.
You know, that there's enough topsoil there with a bit of organic matter in it just to make the top of the ground look black.
Okay.
But not really very much.
Okay.
And
that's probably pretty common, right, in new subdivisions?
Yep. Yes, and what's underneath that has been, actually, there's a great term somebody had come up with. They called it builder's loam.
Oh, okay.
You know, that mix of subsoil and debris from building houses.
That's right, the bricks and the
consistency of concrete.
Yeah.
So it doesn't drain very well and certainly has no nutrients in it. That's where, buying the manure, buying the compost, they're not going to hurt anything doing that. The other extreme, somebody who's got a well-established garden, has been good to the ground and may have been good to the ground to the point that adding more stuff is going to cause problems.
Okay.
And we really need to look at, if we do get a soil test done, checking what's the salt content.
All right. Especially in spring, right? That would be an issue?
Any time of year.
Any time of year, okay.
Any time of year. It'll show up more in spring because the effect we usually see from high salts is new seedlings come up unevenly or don't grow at all.
Okay.
It often shows where things are growing poorly, so we put more stuff on and then they just die completely.
Mm, okay. And so does salt stay in the, from our salting of our walkways, just the salt stay in that soil for?
A lot of it will, if it's next to the walkways, it'll get replenished each year. But we do have enough water in our area that it usually gets flushed out during the winter and early spring.
Okay.
It's more what we add to the gardens. And it's a myth to think, salt, I only have to worry about the sodium chloride that I put down for, de-icing the walkway.
Right.
No, anything that dissolves acts like a salt. Because what it's doing is it's actually, you've got a concentrated solution outside the root, and it's actually pulling water out of the root instead of letting water go in.
Okay.
It's like making pickles.
Really?
Really. It's exactly the same process. If you're putting, concentrated fertilizers are worse because it's too easy to put too much on.
Okay,
It doesn't, the right amount doesn't look like very much.
Yeah. Yeah, and but those bags, they sell those bags really big. They don't sell them in little bags, do they?
And even if we read the instructions and it says, this should do, 1,000 square feet, and we look at it and think, that doesn't look like very much if I put it on at that rate. I'll give it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And if you do that every year, it adds up.
Yeah, definitely.
The nitrogen in the fertilizer, acts like a salt. The potassium in the fertilizer acts like a salt. Anything that will dissolve will have that same effect.
Okay.
And that's where you have to watch some of the composts, that they are actually bringing a fair bit of salt with them.
Okay.
Is
that the ones like, let's say, a contractor would bring, or ones that are bagged? Or people could bag their own.
Too much of anything is not a good thing.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So there is such a thing as too much good. Organic material, because I kind of think there's that myth out there that there's never too much. You can always improve the soil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are cases where there's too much. Anything that's high in nitrogen, so a manure compost would be more risky than a yard waste compost. If you go to the mushroom plants.
Okay.
And get the spent mushroom compost.
Yeah.
Wonderful material at a fairly low rate, but those tend to be high in salts.
Okay. Wow, so that's interesting.
Just be a little bit careful and not get carried away.
Okay.
The other thing, if you put a lot of organic matter in, a lot of organic material, that's going to break down and, heard of situations where somebody's we've put replaced a third of the soil in the planting hole for the tree with compost and peat moss. That third, most of it disappeared, and suddenly the tree is sitting in a hole.
Oh, and that's, would that be why some of the, do you see the trees and they kind of sank, they're? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Because people got carried away.
Yeah. Okay. That really makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Moderation
well,
in all things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I do want to, I definitely want to talk about soil testing, but I think we'll talk about that after we return from our commercial break.
Okay.
So hang on, Keith, and we'll be right back. You are listening to Down the Garden Path. I'm Joanne Shaw, and we will be right back. You are listening to Reality Radio 101.
Looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario, or visit our website at www.PamperMeOrganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price. When you visit Peacock Lumber, you will step back in time to a place where purchasing wood products was simple, efficient, and pleasant. In our office, you can view our large selection of moldings and receive advice from knowledgeable sales staff. Once you have decided on your order, you can pick up your materials in our drive-through yard or utilize our delivery service. For pickups, take your vehicle out to our traditional lumber yard, where someone is always there to assist you. If you are accustomed to purchasing wood products at a box store, you will be impressed by the variety, selection, and quality of products that we offer and the ease in which you get your vehicle loaded and get you on your way. Peacock Lumber is conveniently located on 8 acres in central Oshawa. It was started in 1939 by Victor Peacock and remains family-owned and operated. If you need quality wood products for your renovation, please call us at 905-725-4744. That's 905-725-4744. Or for a full list of products and prices, go to www.peacocklumber.ca. Come to Peacock Lumber first to get the price, selection, quality, and service that you expect. The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, your garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live right now, email us, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, back to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome back, everyone. I'm here tonight with my guest, Keith Reed, author, a soil scientist and author of Improving Your Soil, a Practical Guide to Soil Management for the Serious Home Gardener. And you were just, before the commercial break, you were telling us how there is such a thing as too much of a good thing in the garden. And so my question to you is, how do we know, and do we do those? And I have to admit, I've been gardening. I'm a landscape designer. I've never done soil tests in my customers' gardens, nor in mine. So is that something homeowners should do?
I guess when I was writing the book and thinking about, okay, how do we frame things? What are the most important things? Most gardens, a soil test isn't going to tell you or won't be the first thing you need to do.
Okay.
Because most gardens have so many, if you like, physical issues, whether it's a drainage or poor soil structure or poor aeration. If you don't address those first, getting the chemistry right isn't going to help.
Oh, okay.
But once you've gotten through that, and especially once you've got, a few years in, to an established garden, taking a soil test, and it's not something you need every year. Once every 3 to 5 years, or even longer, if you're adding a lot of stuff each year, or if you haven't been adding anything at all. Just to track what's going on there. And the standard soil test, the things you want to look at are soil pH, how acid or how alkaline the soil is, the phosphorus and potash concentrations in the soil. Those are usually the limiting nutrients.
Okay.
Nitrogen is usually limiting, but we can't measure it very easily. It's too slippery. It keeps changing.
Okay.
So we don't worry about a nitrogen test. We just sort of replace what we use each year. And then, as I'd mentioned before the break, looking at the salinity or the measure is actually electrical conductivity.
Ooh, okay. That sounds scientific for a soil.
Well, it seems maybe a little extreme, but really it's just saying the more salts there are in the solution, the more easily it'll carry an electric current.
Oh, okay.
The more conductivity.
Okay.
And that goes back to it doesn't matter what the salt is. It's the fact you've got something in solution. So this is just a quick measure of how much you've got in solution. And there's standards that say, okay, if you're at this level, it's safe for everything. If you're at a little higher level, well, your peas are probably going to die, or your beans are going to die, but the carrots or the tomatoes will be fine. And then eventually you get to the point where the asparagus even dies, because asparagus is probably as tolerant of high salts as anything in the garden.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it's not that everything dies at once.
Mm-hmm.
There is a range of sensitivity.
Okay.
But that gets to that'll be when a gardener says, but I've tried everything and everything I do seems to make it worse.
Right. And that is it, or do you think you're thinking specifically the vegetable gardeners out there? I mean, that's probably where soil is even more important. I know it's important in my flower garden and my shrubs and ornamental grasses, but it's more important even with vegetables, right? Because now we're trying to grow food, and different plants want different vegetables want different type of soil.
Well, different vegetables will do better in different types of soil, or will have sensitivities to different things.
Okay.
But it's right across the board.
Okay.
If we're trying to grow ornamentals.
Yeah.
And some ornamentals are very sensitive to high salts.
Okay.
Some ornamentals are very sensitive to low pH or acid soils. And that's where you get into the situation where you really want to know what's there.
Right. Now, what's the best fix for high salt? Is there an easy answer to that?
The best fix for high salt is resisting the temptation to put more stuff on.
Okay. And does that include manure and compost?
And that includes manure and compost.
Okay. But not to add just tops. Like, do we need to add anything then?
If you can leach away the salts.
Okay.
That will help. And as I said, we get excess moisture through the winter. We usually, you know, if we aren't putting in a fresh supply each year, those salts will leach away.
Right.
You know, so it's a matter in our environment, it'll correct itself.
Okay.
You know, if we were in Saskatoon, maybe not so much because they're much drier.
Oh, right.
You know, so those salts will hang around because they don't have the water to leach them away.
Okay. Yeah, and our listeners are from all over North America, so.
Yeah. If the other thing is, it's not just enough to be adding water. The water has to be able to actually get away. You know, so if you've got a poorly drained area, those salts may accumulate there because the water, you know, it just evaporates. It doesn't.
Okay. It's not running off.
So that may mean, making sure there's some actual drainage that will, you know, let that water get away, whether that's below the surface or even off, you know, running off the surface. If it's salts that are specifically, high sodium, where it is literally next to the sidewalk, it has been the road salt that's been put down on the sidewalk. In that situation, gypsum could be a help.
Oh, right.
Because that will, the calcium and the gypsum will help to push the sodium out of the soil.
Okay. And is that all right for the lawn as well? Let's say along the walkway and sidewalk and.
It's not going to hurt anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, gypsum's pretty benign.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of gypsum because I think it's been oversold.
Right.
You know, it's been sold as a miracle cure for everything. It does work in very specific circumstances, and we don't have those specific circumstances all that often.
Okay. yeah, for sure. So if it is a homeowner, a gardener who's been, their vegetable garden and their ornamental gardens, really over the last several years adding lots and lots of product, whether it be manure or compost to their gardens, it's okay to let it rest for a couple of years?
Yes.
Okay. And then they may see even things grow better.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you let the garden rest for a couple of years, it does a few things. It breaks disease cycles.
Oh, okay.
What you've been returning each year with, or growing on the plants, those pathogens, they die out because there's nothing for them to live on. It will help to improve the soil structure because if you're not in there and mucking with it all the time.
Right.
So you'll actually improve the internal drainage.
Okay. And I could see that too, people adding all of those bags of things in the spring. And then by midsummer, beginning of July, then they're doing the water-soluble fertilizers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're continuing to add more and more.
Yep.
Okay.
We have an email for Keith.
Oh, we do.
Yes.
Excellent.
And let's see. Hello, Joanne. Hi, Keith. You guys are doing an awesome job tonight. It's fun listening to the two of you, my favorite people, having a chat. Wow. There's a precursor.
this is going to be a zinger then.
Yeah. This is going to be a zinger. Okay, so here's the question. It's got a couple of parts to it. It says, this is from Heather, and she says, I'm looking for suggestions for a soggy lawn. It says, she goes on to say, my house is on a hillside and my backyard slopes west and down away from the house. There is a shed in the yard, but absolutely nothing else. No trees, no shrubs, no shade. And she says, but I found that my grass is almost always soggy right through the summer, even when the weather is dry. It just never seems to dry out. It's especially soggy right now. And she's not walking on it, of course.
Yes, okay.
But here's her question. Keith, do you have any suggestions for what I should look into in regards to finding a way to have drier soil? And that's from Heather.
Okay. And that's a challenging situation, especially in a lawn, because from what she describes, it sounds like either and if I understood it correctly, the lawn's sloped away from the house.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Either the foundation drains aren't draining properly, so there's water coming, down off the eaves troughs and out in under the lawn somewhere, or she's got a spring or a side hill seep where water's coming up from underneath. And, of course, the real drawback is she has to mow the lawn all summer long, even during a drought when everyone else is kicking back with a glass of wine on the patio.
That's right.
There's no easy fix for something like that on top. Because the description, you know, from what she's describing, you know, surface water should be draining away. And getting subsurface drainage in there, number one, you need an outlet. You need a place for it to go.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost sounds like a construction solution, you know, like a weeping tile, possibly.
And often getting a tile, I guess the engineering fix, if you like, that I would try, and you'd almost need someone in there who's got some experience with drainage, would be another tile, you know, maybe 8, 10, 12 feet out from the house that could hook in to the foundation drains to take that water away.
Yes.
But actually put the tile down, put crushed stone above the tile so that if there's any water flowing horizontally through the soil, it actually hits the stone and then goes down to the tile. And then, you know, 6-8 inches of topsoil on top of that.
Yeah.
It gets pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And
you need to have a professional do it. It's not necessarily a do it yourself, right?
It's not a do it yourself unless you're really ambitious, because you literally are ditch digging.
Yeah. And you do put gravel. You know, there's layers of things. There's layers of gravel. There's a sock. And this one thing that bothers me is we call it weeping tile, but it's actually a tube.
Mm-hmm.
So with little holes in it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the misnomers in our industry. So I hope that helps, Heather. I don't know if we've completely. I guess we've let you know that it's not an easy fix. So if you've done a few different things, it is time to call a landscape contractor in your area.
I suppose the other option is dig a pond.
Yeah. I was thinking of planting some trees too, because she said she had no trees. So if you had some trees, they would drink up some of that water anyway.
Yeah, if she planted willows, the neighbors would all hate her. But
that's right. Yeah.
They like wet feet.
They certainly do. But there are a few other trees and shrubs, you know, dogwood, some things that like it a little wet as well. So, yeah.
And it depends too if it's just a patch or if it's the entire lawn.
Yes. Yeah. It definitely is. So, hope we gave you some food for thought there, Heather. Thank you very much for your question. We were talking about fertilizing, and that the liquid, you know, even the liquid fertilizer, adding that to the soil.
Well, and the liquid fertilizers, they are concentrated.
Yeah.
So even diluting them with water to spray them on, that's got a fairly high salt content.
Okay. And I have to admit, I'm never sure. I read the ratio, and I'm never sure what size the scoop is, and and what size that watering can is, and that type of thing. So I'm sure. And if I'm, you know, I'm experienced at this, so if I can only imagine what homeowners are doing, right, and just toss in an extra.
If some is good, more is better.
That's right. That's the motto, right?
And the soil is incredibly resilient.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a fairly broad range of nutrient soil or soil pH or even the salt content in the soil that plants will do just fine. And the soil will buffer that. But then we do get situations where, yes, we've exceeded the capacity of the soil to buffer that anymore. And that's really what a soil test is telling you, is how close to that edge am I?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, it may be, so you're kind of on the fence about the soil test as to, it can't give us enough details, but it can kind of help you.
It will always give someone useful information.
Okay.
But that information may be, okay, I'm fine.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and it's a bit of human nature that we feel disappointed if it didn't tell us we're either exceptional exceptionally good or exceptionally bad.
Right,
but
right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I think knowing you're okay is
it's okay.
Not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, with the capacity of the soil to, as I said, to buffer everything but the extremes, it's not the first place I'd go, but
right.
it's something I think more gardeners should be doing.
Okay.
I would caution, though, number one, make sure it's a lab that actually does soil tests for gardeners or for farmers' fields.
Okay.
If you go to an environmental lab, you will get lots of numbers. They will scare you. You'll have spent far more for the soil test because they have a whole lot of rules they have to follow and,
okay.
And standards they have to meet that they have to pay for, and it won't give you useful information as far as what's available for the plants.
Okay.
So knowing what the total phosphorus concentration or content of the soil is doesn't tell you how much of that phosphorus is available to the plant.
Okay. Okay. All right. And you have information in your book about finding soil tests and finding the right labs all across North America. So
yes.
So that's another reason to pick up Keith's book, because there's lots of good information in there and a lot of good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
As a landscape designer, often when I design a garden and then let's say we're going to put a new garden in, we usually remove, the contractor, does the work, but we usually will remove, up to 6 or so inches, sometimes more, of their soil after we've removed their plants.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're dead, if we're moving in an existing home and we're taking out all their old plants and removing that soil, and then we bring in new topsoil, a new triple mix. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, if you're going to change the grade, you want to remove the topsoil, change the grade of the subsoil,
okay,
and then put topsoil back, rather than, if you just go in and grade it, you end up with deep topsoil in some areas and none in others.
Right.
So in that situation, removoving the topsoil makes sense.
Okay.
If you're not changing the grade, you're just moving a whole lot of dirt.
Yeah, we are. So in that case, would it be like a soil test to kind of see, although I don't know if we have, I don't know what the turnaround is for a soil test, so I don't know that we'd have that time to.
Yeah, it's usually a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so it's tricky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or do we bring in compost and manure and add it to their existing soil, but then that goes back to more is not necessarily better, right?
Yeah, that's. Wanting to know what's there.
Yes.
And if it's a matter of, removing topsoil and replacing it with something else, it may be, okay, we've fallen prey to let's avoid any chance of lawsuit. Let's remove that risk that we know we have a known material that's going in and we can't blame it on that.
Right.
If things don't go right.
Yeah. I have more control over what we're getting as
mm-hmm.
opposed to what is there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But the caution would be, and I know I got caught this way myself, because we did change the grade in our front yard significantly, and so they removed all the topsoil, and I didn't specify in the contract what depth of topsoil had to be replaced.
Yes.
And so I'm planting perennials into subsoil.
Yep.
So we all get caught.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, it's time for another commercial break. And so we'll be right back, Keith.
Okay.
And you're listening to Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101. We will be right back.
Looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario, or visit our website at www.pampermeorganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price.
Isle's West Indian Food Mart in Pickering would like you to visit their store for a wide variety of fresh fruits and vegetables, halal meats, fresh and frozen fish, and provisions from the islands. They have weekly specials at unbelievable prices for the whole family. Drop by today and see for yourself. Then fill your cart up with something from the island. Yeah, man. Isle's West Indian Food Mart is located at 1660 Kingston Road and Brock Road in Pickering on the northwest corner, Units 7 and 8. They offer excellent service and they will even customize your meat orders. Come over to Isle's West Indian Food Mart today at 1660 Kingston Road in Pickering. Their telephone number is 905-686-2584. That's 905-686-2584.
Welcome back to In Down the Garden Path. We are here. Are you? With Joanne Shaw. Right here, Reality Radio 101. And now back to your host, Joanne.
Thank you and welcome back to Down the Garden Path. We're talking soil. And time flies, doesn't it, Keith?
It sure does.
Yeah, 50 minutes is gone. Yes, it is. It's gone. So I do want to, my big thing is I also wanted to talk about mulch and kind of your opinion. I didn't quite get to that part in the book. There's pros and cons, though, I assume.
I did title that little section the dark side of mulch.
Yes.
I love mulch. It's great stuff. It retains moisture. It suppresses weeds. It does break down eventually and add organic matter to the soil.
Okay.
So it is a good soil amendment that way. But it's acting slowly because you've left it on the surface. It isn't mixed in with the soil, so it doesn't break down right away.
Right.
The downside is...
Aside from the red color, we can't use the red one, but aside from that...
I'm not fond of the mulches that are dyed.
Okay.
I would rather use a natural mulch because it's going to stay... It'll retain that color or at least fade out to a natural looking gray color, and I think that looks much better as a background for the plants.
Yes.
Some of that's taste, but yeah, we'll go with it.
That's right.
The downside is, it will actually keep the soil too wet.
Okay.
And so if you've got a low area in the garden, you put a lot of mulch down, suddenly you can create conditions where you've got fungal diseases building up in that soil under the mulch.
Right.
And that's where you really have to be careful to, make sure you've got the mulch back away from the stems of the plants or the plants will just die.
Right. Okay. And I've had some customers with that issue. Yes, there was some fungus started to form in the mulch after we'd installed the gardens.
And I'm less worried that you'll see that fungal mycelium growing through the mulch.
Uh-huh.
That's not the same as the fungi that are actually pathogenic to plants.
Oh, okay.
There's, a lot of different fungi. There's a lot of different bacteria. So those white threads, that's probably not, unless you've got, it would be a worry if it's a tree that you've got those growing against.
Right.
It's the same fungi that would break down the wood in the tree.
Okay.
So if you had any kind of an injury in the bark, then they would become pathogenic where they wouldn't normally. But it's more creating the environment for something like a Phytophthora or a verticillium that will kill the more tender plants that you really have to watch.
Okay.
That's where mulch can be a bad thing.
Right.
The other thing is if you have a heavy mulch and we have an extended dry period, and then you get a little bit of rain.
Yes.
Or mm-hmm. you decide, I'll just water the garden lightly.
Yes.
Well, you wet the top of the mulch, but nothing actually gets to the soil.
Right. So you have to be really cognizant of that, right? Of making sure.
You have to make sure the water actually gets down and wets mm-hmm. the soil, and then it will retain moisture.
Okay.
But you can't let things get too dried out. There's also issues where somebody, they've got a heavy layer of mulch. They decide they're going to work up a garden, and they work all that into the soil. And mulches tend to be high in carbon.
Okay.
High in carbon, low in nitrogen. That's part of why they're stable. They don't
right.
break down quickly. If you've got that, the only interaction is just at that narrow layer where the mulch sits in the soil, it's not going to do much in the soil. If you mix that through the soil, suddenly you've got all that carbon mixed in with the soil. The bacteria use that organic material as food, but they're short of nitrogen.
Oh, okay.
It's like a banquet for them, but they need the nitrogen to balance it off.
Yeah, and I would think that would take a while to break down as well.
Well, depending how much is there, but mm-hmm. yes, it can take a while. But in the meantime, it just binds up all the the mineral nitrogen from the soil.
Okay.
And if you think about it, you may have a few miles of plant roots, in that square yard of,
yes.
of
mm-hmm.
topsoil. You've got several hundred billion bacteria in there.
Okay.
If it's a race, the bacteria win.
Ah.
if you are going to say, okay, I'm going to work up that section, it means take the mulch off.
Right. Okay.
And then work it up. And then maybe you put the mulch back or you put it somewhere else. But
okay. And that answers a question I didn't even ask you, because that was one of my questions. Because I have the mulch on my garden, if I did need to add something, what do I do? Because now the mulch is covering it.
Yeah,
so
that means you just scrape it back.
Yeah, scrape it back and put it on.
Yeah, so
okay.
you get to bare dirt. There's always some gets mixed in, but try to keep it to a minimum.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
The other thing I was going to mention, too, I didn't mention about soil tests, and you did say we have listeners from across North America.
Yes.
Soil pH is really important.
Okay.
In southern Ontario, where we are, most of our soils, the vast preponderance of soils, are alkaline.
Mm-hmm.
And most plants love alkaline soils or do quite well in alkaline soils, so we don't have to do anything.
Right.
Other areas, and there's some areas in Ontario, if you're along the sandy soils down in Norfolk County along the North Shore of Lake Erie, they are often acid on the surface. Certainly if you're down on the eastern seaboard of the U.S., there's soils start out acid in those areas. That's where a soil test tells you, okay, I need to add lime.
Oh, okay.
But adding lime, if you don't have an acid soil, really doesn't do anything.
Okay.
I look at some of the standard display in the garden center, and there's these little packets of lime to sweeten the soil. Well, our soil's already sweet.
Right. Okay.
So it's not something that's going to give you a benefit.
Yeah.
And right next to it, you've got packets of sulfur because we're going to acidify the soil. Well, our soils have enough lime in them to start with.
Right.
The sulfur isn't going to do anything.
Yeah. That impulse purchasing at the garden center it can get us into a lot of trouble, can't it?
Or it can, most often it will benefit the manufacturer without actually doing anything either positive or negative.
Okay.
But the odd time it does something that does hurt us.
Yeah. Okay.
But most often it's just, we're making the garden far more expensive than it needs to be.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, I can't believe we've gone through all that time. So in addition to, I do want to give a shout out to your book as well. I think you covered the material very well, and the diagrams and the links and to labs and other references were very helpful. I think it's going to make a great addition to my bookshelf for my garden and my customers.
I've tried to make it accessible.
Good.
We tend to too often as scientists to lapse into jargon, and if you can't understand the words, it's not helpful. I've tried to use the language that a gardener would understand.
Excellent.
By the way, Heather wrote back and she said that thanks for the tips on the soggy lawn. She likes the pond idea.
Ah, there you go. That's good. Is there anything else you'd like to mention or promote, Keith, as we wrap up?
Oh, that's always the hard question. we've gone on talking about lots of stuff, sort of stream of consciousness, and coming up with something pithy at the end of the hour is not something I'm really good at.
Okay. Well, your book is available at all.
It is available on online booksellers. I know it's at Chapters.
Okay.
I know a lot of local bookstores are carrying it as well. Or it's available directly from Firefly Books.
Okay, excellent. And they also have it as an e-book, but I thought I could just see myself dropping my iPad in my garden while I was reading it. So I don't know if it's makes a great... but it's a good read, especially now. And if it takes you longer to get back out in the garden, please, if you've taken one thing right away from our talk today, it's please let your garden dry out before you start walking on it, including including the sod. No getting out there that first nice day and raking your lawn.
Patience.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Keith, for joining me today. I've really learned a lot. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. You have a great night now. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Down the Garden Path. I hope you enjoyed learning. It felt like a little bit like a science class, eh, Gary? Learning about soil, and it just helps us think about spring, which is coming.
I wonder if when he was a kid, like us, if he ate dirt.
Like probably.
Probably.
Well, he said that as a kid, that's what got him interested in it. So I think that's a
mud
great
pies,
thing.
That's right.
So thank you very much for joining me on Down the Garden Path. Next week, our guest is Janet Cox, and we're going to talk about chickens.
Nice.
In the backyard. Gary, you've got room for some chickens.
Yeah, because I like them. I'll eat them. Yeah.
Well, first we want to eat the eggs.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to hearing about that. And so thank you. And again, write me if you have anything else you'd like me to research. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw. Right here on Reality Radio 101.